The Andrew Peed Show. BBC
Radio Berkshire. Saturday morning with Andrew until 10. Lines open now if you've got a question about technology. Many of us are using much more technology than we normally might to keep in touch with people, to keep ourselves entertained at home, using streaming, that kind of thing. Maybe you've got questions about your laptop and the security on it. 0808 100 5100. The gadget detective, Fevzi Turkalp, is here with the answers. Morning, Fevzi.
Good morning. How are you?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Lovely to be to come and join us and spend some time answering questions again this morning. Kate's in Aldershot first. Morning, Kate.
Good morning, Andrew. May I say firstly how much I enjoy your morning shows? You're absolutely great.
That's kind of you to say. Thank you very much, Kate. I appreciate it. What do you want to ask, Fevzi?
What I'd like to ask is, how can I get virtual background on Zoom on my Windows 10? I can only get a bit of it and it flickers away, but I haven't got a green screen. So is there a way to get virtual background on Zoom with Windows 10 without a green screen?
Why do you want the virtual background, just as a matter of interest?
Well, you know, when we're having our Zoom calls, it's quite fun to be able to put up one of your own pictures or one of the pictures that are there, you know, one of the sort of sunny locations that we're not at.
Saves tidying the house as well, potentially.
Yes.
Fevzi, how do you do the virtual background?
Hello, Kate. Right. Well, you can do it. It depends on the machine that you're running. Zoom is kind of clever in that it determines how powerful your computer is and then works out what features it will give you. So the options are, if the machine is a little bit old or underpowered, for example.
Can I just say it's a new machine. It's only about 6 months old.
Perfect. All right.
So it's an HP.
Okay. So in that case, the options should appear. I was just going to go through the three options. So Zoom will either show you no options about this. It will show you the option to have a still virtual background. Or if you've got a super duper machine, it may show you the option to have still or animated virtual backgrounds. Okay, so you can have ones that are moving in the background. So whether it offers it or not will depend upon how it sees your machine. Once those options appear, you can select a virtual background, but the number that they give you of virtual backgrounds are quite limited. It's just literally a handful. But there should be a little, next to the little thumbnails of the virtual backgrounds that are available, there will be a plus sign. And if you click on the plus sign, what it allows you to do is navigate on your Windows laptop to where your pictures are. You can store virtual backgrounds yourself or convert a standard photograph into a background, and then it sort of imports it into Zoom and makes it available within the app. And I would just say that the BBC archive has just released about 100 pictures for use as virtual backgrounds in Zoom and other apps, which are from the sets of various BBC programs. So my background will now be the TARDIS, but you can choose the set of Only Fools and Horses or Porridge or whatever else. So you've got all these classic TV series, and the BBC have kindly, during this sort of difficult time, stepped up and made available these really high quality background images. So are you, the question then is, Kate, are you seeing the option at all to do this?
I am actually seeing that, and it also has a little box that says green screen, and it's got ticked. Okay. And I haven't got a green screen, but I can't get rid of this box that says green screen.
Okay, so the virtual background will work without a green screen, but it's not very good. And when I say that, what happens is, as you move your head around, you get this sort of ghosting effect around your head. It looks very unnatural. It does work if you keep quite still, but that, you know, if we're a little bit animated, then it's not so good. It gives you the option to say, I've got a green screen. And then if you give it that option, and it knows, it even allows you to pick the key colour, that's to say the colour that appears in the background but not in the foreground, in other words, the colour of the green screen. So if you've got that, or in fact, if you've got like a wall which is uniform of any colour behind you, it will still work. It doesn't actually have to be green. You can tell it to look at the background colour, whatever it happens to be, but it needs to be uniform. Otherwise, what happens is you find that, you know, you disappear, bits of you disappear, bits of the foreground appear, and that you need a green screen, ideally uniformly lit. So we're all heading into this field of sort of TV production values.
Yeah, absolutely.
So forth,
I was going to say, a few weeks ago, we didn't know what Zoom was, let alone, we're all there trying to exploit its more intricate features.
I know, and if I was going to be really intricate, I'd tell you, if you do get a green screen, don't forget you have to light the screen as well as yourself, and it's different for each. So you've got all these, people. Yeah. I encountered someone the other day who'd actually had a set built behind them, not a sort of a picture, but an actual set built in their home.
I don't think I want to go down that channel, but what I will say is that for the people that I use Zoom with, they all have Apple, and they get their Zooms up anytime they like, and it's just me that flounders around with having bits of Zoom, bits of background on the picture, and it just doesn't work.
Kate, thank you ever so much for the question. Actually, got a few about Zoom this morning, Fevzy. Sarah, next in Winner, says the built-in microphone and speakers on my laptop are terrible for making Zoom calls. What could I do to make that better?
Okay, now you're gonna make me feel like that's a put up question, because the gadget of the week that I've sent through is a device that would actually do that. So the generic answer to this is the built-in microphone is going to be of limited quality, plus it's going to be a distance away from you, because by the time it's enough away from you for you to see the screen comfortably, it's a distance away from. So for example, I'm speaking to a microphone now, my lips are about 4 inches from the microphone. If you are further away, then you will pick up more echo and reverberation from around the room, particularly if there are hard surfaces, so the sound is echoing rather than being absorbed by soft furnishings and things like that. So you've got a number of choices. Ultimately, you want a microphone that's closer to you. A cheap way of doing that is to plug in what's called a lavalier microphone or a lav microphone, which is a little clip-on microphone like you see newsreaders and so forth have. Goes up the shirt and clips onto the collar, and it can be wired, and it can go straight into your, if you've got a microphone input socket, you can just put it straight into there. If you don't have a microphone input socket, then you can use a wireless microphone, such as a Bluetooth microphone. There are various brands. Rode, R-O-D-E, do some excellent Bluetooth microphones. Also, the gadget of the week that we've chosen is something called the Anker Power Conf, as in short for conference. And it's a little pod type device which has got 6 microphones built into it in an array, rather like the microphone array that you get in an Amazon Echo or something. It enables you to be heard and other people to be heard from all around the room. So that's a setup where, let's say, you've got family members sitting around the room and they all want to chip in on a call and so forth. What this thing does is the array microphone works out where the person is that's speaking, activates the appropriate mic, levels all the volume. So if someone's right at the edge of the room and you're right on top of the device, it balances the levels, it takes out the echo and the reverberation, and then it sends your voice down, and it also acts as a speakerphone. You can connect it, if you've got PC or Mac, it will just connect either via Bluetooth or USB cable, or if you're using a mobile device, tablet or smartphone, it will do that for you. And the quality of the microphones is much better, but also the processing is much better. And it will work with just about any sort of, video app. So be it, FaceTime or Zoom, or any of the other ones, it will work with all of them.
So this is an Anker Power Conf is one bit of kit that you're recommending.
So Anker is A-N-K-E-R, and it's a Power Conf. And I think the list price is about £100. So these things start, costing. I noticed today on a well-known website they had a £14 off little tick on the checkout. You just tick a box and it knocks £14 off. So it's quite good. If you get it from one of those retailers that's got a good returns policy, then you can just try it. If it works for you, keep it.
Okay.
These sorts of devices, again, these were traditionally used in, they're called Power Conf because they were used in conference rooms. Where you'd have all these very important people sitting around a big table and they all wanted to be heard on a conference call. It was for that. But again, all this technology that was designed for business use is starting to come into the home.
Eric in Crowthorne says, please ask Fevzy if it's possible to record a Zoom message and then attach it to an email to send to friends.
Yeah, so you can record, and even on the free version, you can record. There's an option to record, and you can record audio only, or you can record the video. If you record the video, it's very clever what it does. It gives you a what's called an MP4 file or an MPEG-4 file, which is an audio-visual file. It stores it on your computer, and it will give you an audio-only version of it as well in a separate audio file. And then with that, you can do a couple of things. The free version allows you to store that on your computer. And then you've got a fairly big file that you have to work out what to do with because it might be too big to email. On the paid-for versions, they give you some storage space on their sort of cloud computing platform, and then all you need to do is send a link to it. But there are ways of uploading, audio. There's free services where you can upload audio and then just send people a link, because after an attachment gets a certain size, it won't work. It will just fail, a few megabytes. They 10, 11, 12 megabytes,
that sort of thing.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the email service that you've got. The standards vary, but it gets a bit tricky, and you find that when you're trying to attach lots of photos to a single email, you often go over the limit. Some programs tell you before you send it that you're over the limit. Others will just fail to deliver it, which is less helpful. But you can do it, and the recording facility is built into Zoom and available on the free version, which is really very good.
If you've got a question about the technology we're using to keep in touch with people at the moment or order things, if you've got a question about passwords, laptops, security, anything techie, Fevzi's here till 9, 0808 100 5100. This is something that's been replicated in our house. A question from Holly in Bracknell, who says, basically, I've forgotten my passwords, and suddenly we need passwords for Google accounts, Microsoft accounts, Skype accounts, all sorts that we might have set up 5 years ago and not used since. How do you find what your passwords are or reset them, Fevzi?
Okay, so depends what it is, but in general, there is after you've tried a few times and failed to enter your password correctly, there's often a little option that says, I've forgotten my password. And what that does, it doesn't send you, if it's done properly, it won't send you a reminder of what your password is, because that would be a security risk. It allows you to reset your password. And typically the way it does that is it emails you a link to the email address that's on the account, and then you click on that link, and it will allow you to reset the password. Now the problem comes, of course, if the password that you've forgotten is the password to your email address. Now when you set up an email address like a Gmail or whatever it is, you are often given the option of entering a second email address, which is known as a recovery email address. And if you've done that, if you've got a spare email or even a phone number put in there, you can ask it to help you recover your email. But if you haven't given any other information on an email address, then there's no way of resetting it. So in most cases, you can do it just by saying you've forgotten, and it will send you a reset link. And essentially, that's the way to do it. To avoid this problem going forward and to be more secure going forward, because the danger is, that we all use the same password on different services. And the reason why that's a problem is once one of those services gets hacked, not necessarily on your computer, but on the mainframe that is the website that you've gone to, if you've used that combination of password and email address elsewhere, then all those websites and accounts are vulnerable as well. So if your online shopping gets hacked, but you've used the same password on your banking or your credit card, then what happens is when they steal this information, they go through every possible website that you might be using, all the common ones, all the shopping sites, all the banks and the building societies, and they'll see if that combination appears. And if it is, then they'll open those accounts as well. The way around it is to use password management software, and there are various ones. There are two that I quite like. One's called LastPass, as in the last password you'll ever need, and 1Password, the number 1 followed by the word password. And what they do is two things. They allow you to create unique passwords for each service that you go to, an unguessable one. So you would just say, I want a password that's 16 characters long. I want it to include uppercase, lowercase, numbers and symbols, whatever you want, and it will generate it for you, and then it will save it in what's called a vault, like a central database. That once you've unlocked that vault with a password and something like a fingerprint or a code that they send you, then as you surf the internet, it will automatically enter all your passwords. It's like surfing the internet when it's 1999, you know, when we didn't have to worry about all these things. It will just do it all for you. But the joy is that you end up with a set of passwords that are all different from one another and all unguessable. They're not, you know, your cat's birthdays or, you know, your dog's middle name or anything like that. They are unguessable passwords. So I would recommend, if you haven't already started using a system like that, do it, because it means you don't have to remember your passwords anymore, and it works on different devices. Both of those products that I've mentioned have got free versions, which are quite functional. And then if you find you need some extra bells and whistles, as it were, there are paid for versions of those two as well.
Okay, thank you, Holly. Chris in Church Cookham. Hi, Chris.
Hi. A few months ago, I got a local chap to install Windows 10 on our home PC when that deadline came up where they didn't support the previous version. And when I was expecting the kind of the normal Windows 10 look that I've seen in other places, that kind of black background with those nice sort of squares with the various applications on it, if you know what I mean. But what I get is this news feed that's in my face all the time, and I just like to see the kind of classic Windows 10 look. And I was just wondering, can I avoid that? Can I get rid of this news feed without getting this horribly blank screen with just a line to enter a search in?
Yeah, so Windows 10 is a bit of a movable feast, unfortunately, because they keep updating it and different people getting stuff like this popping up. I mean, we're talking about the main home screen rather than what's coming up in your browser. Is that right?
Yeah, I just want to get back to the classic Windows 10 home screen. I just don't seem to be able to do that.
I mean, it's in the settings. I mean, if you click on the button in the bottom left-hand corner and you get an open window, if you type in Windows settings, it will pop up and you click on there and you can affect the appearance of, well, all sorts of things from there, including the backdrop. So it's effectively using a widget to provide you with the news feed that you don't want. Also, you know, not the most secure thing to do, because it's accessing services that you don't want on the internet, albeit not within a browser. And it's using up system resources as well, which, you know, unless you particularly want it, just turn it off. But as I say, a little tip is, if you don't know where various parts of the Windows operating system are, or you want a particular app and you can't find the icon, when you click on the bottom left-hand corner, you get a little search window come up. That search window will allow you to search for particular features. So, for example, if you want to do a Windows update manually, you don't want to wait for the next one, just type in Windows update. And it will find, above it will appear everything that matches the words that you've typed in as part of the operating system. And then you can go to the appropriate part. In the same way, you can go into Windows settings that way and change how the startup screen appears.
Is there any particular part of Windows settings I should be looking at?
I can't remember what it's called, but it will be something like display.
Or appearance or something.
Yeah, or startup. You can look at that as well. You can also control what applications start up automatically when you boot up or start up the computer. And that's worth reviewing as well.
Right, thanks very much. I was
Good
very
luck.
Interested by your comment that the news feed is not the most secure thing to have in the computer. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, it's interesting. Chris, thank you. Chris in Church Crookham. 0808 100 5100. Still time to get your question on the air with Fevzi Turkalp this morning. Here's my laptop dilemma, Fevzi. So we've got a laptop. It's only a couple of years old. And we've been really, really pleased with it. And it's basically suddenly started becoming unreliable. The connection to the internet seems to drop off all the time, even though other devices have got perfectly happy connection to the internet. Now, I've fiddled around with it. I've put new security on it. That doesn't seem to have helped. I've got to the point where my limited knowledge says, well, could we just store the small number of things that are on the laptop that matter to us and then restore it to factory settings, wipe the whole thing, see if that helps? Is that sensible? And if it is, how would I go about doing the storing thing?
Okay, so you can do that, but that's kind of extreme. That's your last That's your last measure that you would try, because it's quite a lot of work to do that, and things can go wrong. So before you thought about doing that, you'd have to do a complete backup of everything on your system.
Yes.
Just in case it went pear-shaped. So you're talking about a few hours' work, assuming you know what you're doing.
I definitely don't know what I'm doing.
We'll make that the last resort rather than the first one then. So what I would do, first of all, is I would take the laptop closer to the router and see if the problem is still there.
Yes.
Okay, because it could be, because although you've got other devices working, every device's antenna for Wi-Fi is of differing quality. The case construction is different, and therefore you can get differences even in the same location. But if you bring it close and it works and reliably, then it's probably that the signal is not sufficiently solid in that location for that device. If that's the case, then we need to try and bolster the signal. So the reasons why signals get weak with Wi-Fi is one of a number of things. Either, you know, it's too far away and the construction of the house is such that the signal's having to pass through certain walls made of whatever they're made of, and thick walls or walls with any metal in them, for example, will tend to block it. If that happens, you can boost the Wi-Fi signal. You can move the router closer, that's one thing, but assuming you don't want to do that, you can do a couple of things. You can either have a Wi-Fi repeater, which plugs in around halfway. It's like Chinese whispers. It picks up, it sits halfway, it hears clearly the Wi-Fi signal, and then it boosts it and retransmits it. And if you put it about halfway or just under halfway, then the signal can then arrive safely and go back safely to the router without it dropping out. So that's number one. The other thing is that things may be interfering with it. So things like baby monitors, microwave ovens can interfere with Wi-Fi signals. In particular, don't have anything like that active near the router. So the router is the box where the internet comes in and is disseminated around your home. Is about the size of a sort of a book, essentially. So it could be that. The other thing is your neighbor's Wi-Fi signal may be interfering. Okay, so it may be that they've just started using their Wi-Fi, or they've started using it on a Wi-Fi channel, which is the same as yours. So you can plug a laptop into a router using a cable, an Ethernet cable, and then in the browser, you type in a web address, which is made up of numbers, and that brings up the settings for the router. And when you do that, you can actually flip through the different Wi-Fi bands that are available to you. And you can just try flipping through the different ones and seeing if that improves things at all.
Okay.
Because it could be just that, you know, there's other things on that particular band that are causing interference.
If I was going to try the repeater, how much ought I be charged for that sort of thing?
So you can get repeaters for about sort of £25-30. You can pay more. If you want a really sophisticated solution, which is going to cost a lot more, it's called Mesh, M-E-S-H. And what that is you can put a number of these things, dot them around the house, and they create an intelligent Wi-Fi mesh. So as you move around the house, let's say if you're relying on Wi-Fi to augment your mobile phone use. So, for example, in my home, mobile phone signal is pitiful, but it works fine because it piggybacks off my Wi-Fi. It appears to be working as a normal cell phone with incoming calls and outgoing calls working normally, but it's using the Wi-Fi. And what you can do with a mesh system is as you move around, the mesh network works out which is the nearest to you, which one should be used, which combination of routers of mesh nodes should be used to provide you with optimal Wi-Fi signal all around your house. But then you're talking about a few £100. It's much more sophisticated setup. But I would start with a repeater, because if it's only one device in one location that's the issue, then a repeater will probably solve
might
that a lot more cheaply. Again, buy it somewhere where it can be easily returned, because not everything works everywhere. If you get really stuck, there is another solution as well. There's a company called Develo, D-E-V-E-L-O, I believe, German company. They make devices that are like the repeaters, but what they do is they send the internet signal down the mains wiring in your home. So you get two boxes. One plugs in near the router, and the other one plugs in near where you want to use the internet. So it could be right at the other end of the house, as long as it's on the same mains network. And what it does is it encodes the internet data in such a way that it can be sent down a copper wire, which is your power cable, and then it pops out of the socket where the other device is, and either you can plug Ethernet cables into it, or it creates another local Wi-Fi hotspot in that area. And that can be quite good if the distances are long and okay. You know, you've got an older house which has got thicker walls and all of that. So that's something to look out for as well. That's Develo, D-E-V-E-L-O,
E-L-O. I think. Fevzi, thank you ever so much. Have a great weekend. Talk to you next week. Thank you very much.
Cheers. Be well.